Welcome to the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and this is episode number 32 on September 20th, 2018. Today's guest is Trinity Chapman, who joins me to talk about some of the harsh realities of reality cake TV shows, plus how to survive cake disasters, and tips for prepping classes for all skill levels. So whether you're working on your Cake International entry, busy getting client cakes out the door, or wondering how to transition your cake life into other parts of the industry, let's get this show started to educate and inspire you. Joining me now is Trinity Chapman of Sweet Sensations Wedding and Special Occasion Cakes in Russellville, Arkansas. Welcome, Trinity.
Hey,
how's it going?
Oh, I'm doing well. I really enjoyed getting a chance to take a break and just sit and chat with you for a little bit.
Rooster free.
Rooster free, of course, yes.
Yeah,
we no rooster floggings today.
We tried to do this the other day, and between Messenger not going out and roosters. So, okay, what did the rooster do?
Okay, I sent my middle child, Audrey, out to feed the rabbits, water the rabbits. No big deal. It's a normal chore around here. She does it about every other day. And she, minutes before I was supposed to leave to go meet you, she came running back into the house, screaming hysterically, dripping blood down her legs. Screaming, the rooster flogged me and he scared me. And I was like, oh my gosh. So, oh, and then she threw in, and one of the rabbits had babies on the wire again, Mom. So, yeah, moments before I was supposed to leave. So I had to deal with that and go take care of that rooster. He needs a little more home training. Either that or he needs a nice warm bath.
It's a like wild kingdom where you are.
Well, I do live in the foothills of the Ozark Mountains. I have a little like mini farm. We have chickens and rabbits, and we have three dogs. Two of them are outside dogs, and they're very necessary because we have coyotes and we have raccoons. All these things are predators to my little farm animals.
Mm-hmm.
And possums, opossums, some people call them. They all eat chickens and rabbits. And then we also have black bears. And we have a lot of black bears this year for some reason. It's probably due to the fact that there are 800 acres to the north of my property that are being thinned out by a paper and lumber company that I won't name because I hate them. They're thinning that timber and it's destroying habitat and chasing the bears out of where they want to be, which is, you know, deep and hiding, and they don't come out much.
Yeah.
Now they're being flushed out by all that equipment in there where they want to be. And
well, and so heat too. I was reading.
The neighbors have experienced an influx of black bears.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad to have two good mountain cur dogs outside.
So, well, if you're like rural like that, then selling cakes must be quite the challenge.
Yeah, it definitely is. I've been doing this about 10 years, and I have a really good reputation here nowadays, but I don't have a huge clientele. I have a lot of inquiries, but not a lot of people who follow through and place orders.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because I had to set a minimum order because everyone wants like a $40 cake, and
yeah.
I can't do that.
Well, and what they want for $40 is like ridiculous.
Yeah, they want a $400 cake for $40.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And they're quite sure they'll find it.
Yeah.
And frankly, sometimes they do find it. But
yeah, but they're often sad. They often, you know, Cake Rex has its material from somewhere. It's the person who says, oh, yeah, I can make that Pinterest, you know, 5-tier cake. I've never tiered a cake before, but sure, I can just go ahead and do that.
Yeah, I sometimes cringe when I see what they ended up with, but and sometimes they're quite happy with it, so that's all fine.
Yep, but yeah.
It is a challenge. I set my minimum order several years ago on somebody's advice. I can't remember whose, and it worked. It really worked because it was really easy to immediately decide whether or not this was going to be somebody I could work with or not. Mm-hmm. And it saves me so much footwork and paperwork and legwork. And so I started just doing a little bit better cakes for only, you know, fewer people. And yeah. That was fine for a good while. I've started doing something else now, and I raised my minimum order to something, you know, exponentially beyond what most people around here are going to pay. And so I'm only going to be doing bigger cakes for events and weddings now. That's what works for me.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I just set my price. So I don't really want to make cakes for sale at the moment. I don't really have the time or the mental spoons to do it. I prefer to do, I'm doing the podcast, that's eating my life. And I like, you know, the competitions and stuff like that. And so I just set my price really high because it's like, well, if you're going to throw that much coin my way, sure, I'll do you a cake.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is. I just really want to be paid well at this point. If I'm not paid well, then it's not worth doing all those dishes and planning all that is necessary to make a nice cake and all the mess and all the hours away from my kids. And I have this thing wrong with my legs now and my leg veins that causes my legs to swell up really badly. And even though I've had a procedure done on one side, it's still doing it. And then the other side hasn't been done. And, you know, it just hurts. It hurts a lot to stand there and feel your legs begin to swell and still have to stay there and finish. And if you're not being paid well enough to do that, well, why? Really, why?
Yeah. And our art comes with serious deadlines. Like, I mean, if you're knitting someone a sweater, I mean, you may have a Christmas deadline or something, obviously, but like you may have a day or two wiggle room with it, like a quilt that you're making for someone, right? Like even if you're making a baby quilt and the baby's born, like the baby can probably wait a day. No one's going to wait a day for their wedding cake. That's not how our industry works. Like your deadline is your deadline. The party's happening at that time and you have to be there with that thing. There's no wiggle room.
No. And if something disastrous happens at the last minute, you still have to be there.
Yeah.
You still have to be there and you better have the cake.
Yeah. And we get more disasters again than other, again, because like I'm a knitter. I do cross stitch. I do, you know, I used to do stained glass. I've done beading. I've done lots of different things. And I've never had like cross stitch doesn't fall over. Do you know what I mean? Like I guess like someone could spill coffee on it or something, but like generally speaking, the number of errors that could happen in, because just cake is soft. It wants to tear itself to pieces. That's what makes it delicious.
Do you want me to tell a story? It's a funny story about a disaster that did happen to me when I was not very experienced, when I was the yard sale baker.
Oh, sure. Tell the story.
Okay. So once upon a time, Trinity was a yard sale baker. Yes. Trinity had clearance cake pricing and got an order for a wedding cake. Yes, it was a wedding cake. And yes, Trinity could do anything, she said. Oh, she could just do anything, she thought. Don't we always think that? But yeah. Usually it worked. But I was inexperienced, okay? I really was. And this is the only reason I'm telling this story is for those of you out there who still are yard sale bakers, don't do this. Don't take on somebody's wedding cake because this could happen to you, I'm telling you, because you don't know what you think you know. And I'm going to tell you my story because I really, really sucked. I took an order for a topsy-turvy buttercream wedding cake, and I only charged the lady, I don't remember, it was some paltry amount that barely covered supplies and certainly didn't pay me anything for my time. And I was so happy to be able to do a wedding cake. We all know that feeling. I studied, I YouTubed, and I got a DVD. I had Sharon Zambito's DVD on how to make a topsy-turvy cake, and I watched it, and I knew how to make it. I had made one topsy-turvy cake before this, just one, and I thought I had it all figured out, okay? And now here we have July in Arkansas, number one mistake. I don't even take wedding cake orders for July in Arkansas anymore. Or June, for that matter, sometimes. It depends on the heat. Even June, yes, I will turn down a wedding cake order because it's just so hot and it's kind of unpredictable. If you don't have a walk-in cooler or you don't have a refrigerated way to carry a cake, then you can't make a buttercream wedding cake. You really can't, especially not a topsy-turvy. So, yep, it was 110 degrees, if not hotter. And I, at that time, I didn't even have a spare cake fridge. And, I mean, nowadays I have a spare cake fridge and I don't have a walk-in cooler, but I can take on most things in the heat, but I choose not to anyway because of this. But I made that cake and it was beautiful. It really was beautiful. I was so proud of it, but it was so hard to do in the heat. And nowadays in my cake room, I have supplemental air conditioning and a dehumidifier and a cake fridge with nothing but cake and frosting and fillings in it and plenty of room for even a four or five, probably could get six tiers in it easily. I think I've only put five in it. But anyway, I have things now that I didn't have then. I couldn't refrigerate this cake. I was chilling it in between the stages of work I was doing, but I didn't have enough room anywhere to chill the whole cake. Anyway, so I made this cake, and it was 110 or 112 degrees or whatever it was here that day. And here's the other thing. I was carrying it in my lap. My husband, I still carried cakes in my lap. I didn't think I could let it sit anywhere. I thought I had to have control of that cake, and I seriously was carrying it in my lap. I know. I just want to die when I say that out loud. I just want to fall over in shame. But I'm not the one that fell over that day.
Oh, dear. I figured that was coming.
Yeah. This cake collapsed. It was a beautiful hunter green and ivory cake with piping. And it really was what she asked for. And I was so proud of it. But I knew the venue was like 35 minutes away from my house. And, you know, in 110 degree weather, even with your air on full blast, it's still so hot, especially sitting in the front seat with the sun shining in two windows into your lap. Yep. So my cake got softer and softer, and it probably had something to do with the way that I had carved out and placed the cakes in. I had it supported and everything, but something went wrong, and I'm pretty sure it was because there was no chilling involved in the final cake, and the whole cake was at room temperature, and, you know, that temperature raised steadily all the way to the venue. I saw a big crack, and I knew it was going to happen, and I was thinking in my head, oh, my God, what can I do? And before I could even formulate a plan, it was like the cake just imploded in my lap.
Oh, it
was so devastating. Here I am on the way to a wedding at a country club, a very well-known place here, trying to deliver the cake of this woman's dreams, who is, you know, referred to me by a friend. It's not even someone I know. It's not even a good friend who will understand. This person is a stranger to me, and she counted on my reputation as being able to make a beautiful cake. And I'm right there 10 minutes from her venue, and her cake has fallen apart in my lap.
Oh, my God.
I was beside myself.
I bet.
I mean, freaked out. And I was like, what in the world am I going to do? There was nothing I could do, really. There was little to nothing that I could do. And I already knew that I was going to really hurt her by what had happened. But I was like, I can't show up with nothing. She'll have nothing to take photos with. She won't have anything to show off to her guests at all. What possible thing could I do? So I decided to stop at a grocery store bakery, and I bought one of their cake dummy displays. I did.
Wow.
I had to do something, Kim. I just had to.
That's actually really a genius idea, actually. You know.
Well, that's what I did. They didn't have anything near what she'd asked for. I had to buy basically a frou-frou wedding cake, which was not what she wanted, but it was the only one that they would sell me, and it was, I can't really remember what they had, but I think it was the only one that was even close to suitable. And I paid them $100 for that cake display, and I had to jump through hoops and speak to the manager and call. Like, the manager on duty was like, I don't even have the authority to even think about doing that. You're going to have to talk to the real manager, yeah. And he's not here. I had to call this person at home. Oh, I mean, I really jumped through some hoops. It was horrible. And then I bought their display because basically I begged that man. And then I bought like all the sheet cakes they had that were plain white. And I carried everything to the country club and I set up the display cake and I explained to the photographer, whom I knew, what had happened. And then I had to call the bride. She was getting ready. And I had to explain to her maid of honor and then to her what had happened and apologize. And I mean, I was crying. I was so upset. Mm. You know, there was nothing I could do except that. And I felt so bad. Come on. It was the cake.
Yeah.
But the photographer began taking photos. And I thought, you know, at least she'll have some photos of a wedding cake for her album and stuff and something for her guests to look at. And a lot of people have a display cake and then cut sheet cakes in the kitchen anyway. So it wasn't tremendously horrible from that aspect. They mostly didn't know what she had ordered. So maybe it wasn't too much of an embarrassment to her, but I felt so bad. And I swore then and there that I would never, ever let anything like that happen again. Thank God, nothing like that ever has happened again. But I had to give her all her money back. Mm-hmm. Plus, I was out the money for the display. And, you know, I thought, oh, I'll never make a cake in this town again because, you know, this is going to get around and it's going to be horrific. Yeah, surely she told people. Surely she must have. But she was so gracious to me.
Well, that's good.
She was really amazing about it. And thank God she wasn't a bridezilla is all I can say.
Yeah.
I really felt we deserved to be shot that day. I'd have let her. I'd let her take a few swings at me or whatever, you know. But yeah, I felt so bad and there was just nothing I could do. So moral of the story is A, don't do your experiments on someone else's dreams. And B, make darn sure you charge enough that you can at least cover your costs and pay yourself and not lose a bunch of money. And C, make sure that you have the equipment that you need because, you know, there's just things you don't know. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that with someone's wedding cake. Thank God I've never done that again. But it was horrible. It was so horrible. And just telling that story is both cathartic and devastating at the same time.
Hug, hug, hug across the waves.
Yeah. I feel like crying. Still feel bad for her.
Yeah, well, because, yeah, I mean, okay, but you didn't bail. You did everything you could. I mean, yeah, and like, I mean, yeah, what else are you going to do at that point? I mean, physics has happened. Whether you wanted it or not, right? Physics has happened.
I do feel like I did some pretty good problem solving on that, you know, to make the most of what was left of the situation. You know, what could be salvaged, I did.
Yeah.
But thank God that man let me buy that dummy. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I mean, like, that it was even there. I wouldn't even have thought about it. When I think grocery store cakes, the ones that, you know, in Texas, I used to see were frankly fairly horrifying. Like, one of those, the doll cakes, right? And it,
oh God.
It had, like, neon blue and neon pink, really poorly piped dress on it. And it was dusty because it was sitting there all the time. So, like,
it was... Luckily, this one was inside of a case.
That's good, yeah.
It wasn't poorly decorated. It was at least a decent wedding cake.
That's much better because whenever I think grocery store cakes now, that's what I think of is this terrible, like, multi-neon, gnarly old Barbie.
At least it wasn't a Walmart display cake.
Yeah, right? You did what you could. And you've learned, and yeah, I mean, I had a cake fall over.
I've learned.
Should I tell the story of when my cake fell over?
Okay.
I was doing, this was, I wasn't getting paid at all. This was donated to Peo's school in Austin for an event at the school. And, like, their logo is a rocket ship. So I thought, well, I've made 3D cakes. I can surely make a upstanding rocket cake. And I knew about structure. But I guess what I didn't really, I don't think I intuitively knew about staking the whole thing. Or having, like, an all thread or whatever all the way up through it. I think that may have been before I got to that level of structure. I mean, I knew about doweling structure, right?
So many people don't know about that centered rod through the whole thing.
Yeah, see, and this is where this, that's why this cake fell over, because I didn't do that. And I think I knew partway through, but, like, you know when you think you convince yourself it's going to be okay because you're tired and you're on deadline, and then it's not. So that's part of why now I am sort of like a, you know, a downer on myself all the time, because it's like I'd rather be yelling at myself and get it done right, because one time I let myself slide, the cake literally slid. So what happened was it was a rocket cake. Okay, so problem number one in rushing it, let's think of a PG way to say what rocket cakes look like when you don't do a good job. Okay? So already it's looking like... Yeah, it's looking, but like fat and stubby one. Okay.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's already like, I mean, like, you know, things like the stripes and stuff were like, now I know better how to make, you know, even stripes. The rough stripes weren't the problem. The problem is that it looked,
For the school.
So, but that's the thing. The kids aren't going to see that, but the adults look at that and go, huh, well, right. Okay. So that's problem number one. So what I was doing was like a rocket, and I wanted it to look like it was sort of taking off from like a planet. And I started with the planet because that's on the bottom. And I did like a really cool like moon planet thing where I just tried, I was like, what if I take royal icing and like I sort of like smack it on my hands and like pat it all over, right? To make it look spiky. And I didn't have an airbrush at the time, but I had, you know, there's the Wilton color sprays, which actually I have to say I don't give those a very good review. They have a very smell to them, like they're not, but whatever. Okay, like it was 2 days in advance, so like the smell had sort of dissipated, but they have a very propellant smell to them. So like it's not too bad on a cake, but like I used them on cookies once and I'll never use those sprays. And now I have an airbrush, so I would never use those sprays anyway. And they don't have them here, but yeah, I don't, it's as a product, it's a little bit like, it's an amateur level product really is what it is. But whatever. So I sprayed it like with the black lightly. So it would look like gray, like a moony asteroidy kind of thing. And I put the dowels in that. So that was like a large 14 inch dome type thing. And then, like, I'd made 14-inch cakes, and I carved it into a dome. So that was fine. Okay. And I doweled the top of that, where the rocket was going to go. And I realized pretty quickly, oh, I have outstripped my skill level. I actually don't know how to make this look like the rocket is above it with, like, a flamey thing underneath. So I abandoned the flame idea and thought, well, just the rocket is now parked on the meteor or whatever. Okay, fine. But so then I had the rocket itself was all internally supported with like a stake up through it with plates, right? But the thing was, there was nothing supporting between, like, and that was all supported on the dowels into the planet thing, but there was nothing otherwise connecting those. So what happened was, on the day of the event, when I picked it up to move it in the car, I felt the rocket shift. And I was like, oh crap. I could tell at this point the supports that were inside had now shifted, which means they're now cutting through. Any support you have in a cake is a knife inside that cake. And this was the day I learned that the hard way. Because so then we drive it all across Austin, like, which is, you know, up and down hills. It's hill country. and, you know, on the freeway. So, you know, up the ramp and up and over. Anyone who lives in South Austin knows what I'm talking about. On the Mopac, you have to go up and over, and there's this huge thing. And then, you know, all the way up to, like, it was 32nd Street, I think the school was on, and hills and traffic lights, and then hills into the parking lot, and then carrying it into the venue, I could tell that it was not stable. But I didn't have the experience to know how to fix it. So I stupidly, this was the real crucial error here. No. I could feel that the stakes inside were now on an angle. So I shoved it back. And that's what did it. Yeah.
And that cracked it all open.
That cracked the inside. So like on the outside, it still looked like terrible genital cake. it's a rocket, really. And I had done such a good job with the school logo, so I was really proud. I'm like, look at the logo. Don't look at the shape. So we got it inside and it wasn't falling over. And we got it on the table and it wasn't falling over. But it was on one of those, folding tables on like a kind of like a not well supported floor. And kids were running past it for like an hour. And so every time people would run past it or bump the table, it shook a bit more, Well, I went to go meet my daughter's teacher. We left it in the room. And when I came back to the room, everyone was looking at me funny. And I was like, oh, I just know. And the kids, apparently what happened was at one point, no one was even near it and just went, and it fell over. And apparently the kids thought this was the greatest thing they'd ever seen.
Yeah.
That the cake fell over. The adults were all horrified. But for me, like, because no one had paid for this, right? So no one was, like, mad at me. They just all felt... They all just felt bad for me, right? They're the other parents. They felt bad for me. The teachers felt bad for me. Like, oh, my God, your cake fell over. You must be so upset. Like, and I was like, yes, I'm upset. But, okay, so it fell over onto, like, clean table with clean tablecloth. And what they brought out before I was back, they brought out like a sheet tray from the kitchen of the school's kitchen. And they sort of like rolled it onto the sheet tray. So it was all still perfectly edible. And when I again came in and started serving it, I got some of the kids to help me serve it. And because it was a school for gifted kids, so they just like to be involved because they just love doing stuff, right? And I was like, okay, you're gonna help me serve this. And they thought it was hilarious to then put on gloves and just give people handfuls of cake. So the kids thought this was amazing. Like, for years later, the kids were still talking about this amazing awesomeness, and adults had kind of mostly forgotten. But at the end of that, I realized this was a pivotal moment for me, that I could, in my shame, put my tail between my legs and go cry in the corner.
Uh-huh.
Or I could, put my big girl panties on and blog about it as the disaster what it was and as a warning for others. This is why you should make sure you stake through the whole thing. And so on my blog, and I'll link to it in the show notes, on my blog the post is called An Anatomy of a Cake Disaster. And I just fessed up. And you know what? I'm so glad I did, because it like purged the guilt. It purged the shame, because I turned it into...
I feel like I just purged mine, telling you my story.
There you go. See, like, because in warning others, we are taking our shame, our hubris-fueled shame. And because that's the thing. It's when you have that hubris and you fall, that's the greatest shame, right? Because if you hadn't had the hubris, you wouldn't have made the stupid mistake in the first place. But then when we can tell others, look, learn from me, don't have this happen to you, then it at least makes it meaningful and worthwhile in some way.
Well, at the time, I got advice from another professional who told me it would be best to just pretend it never happened. So I dealt with my bride privately. You know, we talked a couple of times after that, and I actually made her some really great free cakes in the future also. I mean, I paid for this multiple times. It took a lot to purge my guilt. I made her at least two free, really nice cakes after that. Plus, I gave her all her money back. Plus, I paid for all those sheet cakes. Plus, I paid for that dummy cake.
Right. Did she ever buy a cake off you later, at least?
Yes.
Oh, see, then that's not so horrible. Actually, she forgave you?
Yes, there were two. There were two more after that. Yeah.
That's as best as you can hope for a client, really.
She wasn't ugly to me ever. She was very gracious and forgiving. And she's a really sweet-spirited lady. I just really admire her for not turning on me with vengeance and spreading my guilt and shame all over town.
Mm-hmm.
She could have done that. She could have destroyed me. I was already destroyed inside, but she could have destroyed my reputation, and rightfully so. I'd have deserved it, you know, especially in my own mind. And she had every right to do that, and she didn't. Not a bad review, not a ugly word. Very gracious woman. I still really feel a lot of gratitude toward her for that, because after that, I was able to still build my business and make a lot of cakes here. If she had been ugly, things could have been really different for me here.
Yeah. And that's, you know, all it takes is a bit of human decency, yeah? It's like...
Yeah, they're decent humans that still walk the earth.
Yeah, that's good to know.
I've had people who received a fabulous cake treat me worse. So, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The things people post, of, you know, the customer reviews, or not even sometimes customer. Like, did you see, you must follow Debbie Gord, right?
Who doesn't?
Yeah, right. But so, she had posted recently that someone had criticized her for her cakes being plain.
Plain.
Debbie, do you know who you're talking to?
In the sky, people. Debbie's cakes are not plain. Oh my god!
It's like you
What's
can't possibly. I know. Like, I'm like, last year, this podcast, I constantly gushed about the towels. And then I declared, like, at the anniversary special that the towels were, like, as far as I was concerned, the cake of the year last year for, like, my small reach in this industry. I just decided that unilaterally that was the cake. And now she's got the massage table. Oh, my God.
The massage table was just amazing.
I know. Jeez. That was, like, mind-blowing.
You would have thought you could have crawled up on it and gotten one. It was amazing.
It's been for years now. If I show my husband a picture and say, you know, what is this? He's learned, and he'll say, well, it's probably a Debbie Gord cake. And that massage table was the first cake I'd shown him in, I think, 2 or 3 years where he didn't even assume that. He's like, it's a massage table. Like we're not buying one. He gives me back rubs. Like, his mind went to, like, we don't need this. You can lay on the couch and I'll give you a back rub. He didn't even, like, it was so not a cake. And then this...
It was so realistic.
Yeah.
It was just beyond fantastic.
It was just mind-blowing. I'm probably going to end up creating that, the cake of the year. I can't imagine what will blow my mind more than that. I mean, there's been some other great cakes this year, but, like,
I don't know. Mike's cake.
Oh, the one we just shared, the glass one?
The furry blown glass?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, jeez.
But it's a totally different kind of cake.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, for realism, it's always Debbie.
Yeah. Well, did you see, Mike had the thing last year, I think, I'm wondering if it's the same client, where he had duplicated a art glass cake, and then side by side, he posted the side by side and was asking people to guess, and we couldn't tell until he gave us the answer. Like, you had a 50-50 chance of getting the answer right because they looked the same.
I have to look for it.
Yeah. I'll find that and put that in the show notes too, because it was like an orange flamey one. But yeah, the one that he just put out yesterday or today, it depends on what time it is. It's almost midnight here. But yeah, so like the curly one, we'll put link to that in show notes too, because it's like, what?
I know. It's like, how did you do that?
Structure. He's the god of structure. That's why.
That kind of structure, I think, is beyond me.
Yeah. It's just, yeah.
And I can usually figure out a structure. But
yeah.
I looked at that, and I didn't look at it for very long, you know, because kids came home as soon as I saw that. But I was just like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That is just amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to guess copper tubing.
Yeah, he does a lot bending copper tubing. My guess is, yeah, that it'll have an all thread partly into the base for that big curve at the bottom is my guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because he said it was 38 inches tall, so.
I saw where he had said that in the comments, and I was, you know, gauging that in my head. Oh, wow, that's really nice.
That's really big. And then, so, yeah, my suspicion is that he's then got a mounted copper tubing, and I have no idea, this is my guess, that he's got where the cake sort of ends from that base, I'm assuming there's a copper tube that goes up, and that he's modeling chocolate covered that
tube. That's what I think too.
Yeah, because it's Mike, so it's Mama Chocolate.
We'll just let Mike make those.
Yeah, that's right, right? Like anyone's ever going to aspire to make the massage table except for Debbie Gord.
Yeah, I can't say that.
It's just so plain. It's just so plain.
Okay, whatever you're doing right now, whether it's actually working on a project, or if you're washing up, or you're stuck in traffic, whatever you've got going on, take a deep breath. Everything's going to be okay, because you're awesome.
Well, I mean, how often have you made a cake and for a birthday, and then realized at the end, I didn't account for where the candles need to go?
Yeah.
I do that all the time.
Really disappointed because one of my favorite little sculpted birthday cakes, it wasn't a large cake, but it had a lot of details on it, and it was really cute. But the only photograph of it that I have has a big, ugly, green and white number 5 candle stuck in it.
Of course, it's a number candle. Because, like, if you plan it in advance, there are certainly creative ways to get particularly, like, stick candles incorporated into a design.
For a while I bought a case of the pretty, very slender, curly birthday candles,
mm-hmm.
and I would just supply them with the cake.
Yeah, because that can really work.
The only pictures I got back, because back then I didn't know how to take pictures. I still don't know how to take pictures. I'm a horrible photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And I, for those who followed my posts about getting a camera and trying to learn how to use it, hell no, I still don't know how to use that camera. But for a while, I bought just this big case of birthday candles that I felt like were at least somewhat decent compared to what they might otherwise shove in my cake.
Right. Like, if it doesn't go with your design, I mean, like, it's ridiculous because we're approaching it as artists coming up with an art product. But the client is approaching it as a cake, and particularly if it's a celebration cake where candles should be there, they want their candles on there. Of course, that's a completely reasonable thing to want, but we're sitting here going, that's ruining my art.
Like, oh gosh, why did you do that to my cake? But, I mean, it's their cake now.
Can you imagine if someone stuck candles in the massage table? Like, that would just be...
Oh, geez. It's better if we don't think about that.
That's right. That would be like sacrilege.
Really? I just can't even abide the thought of that. So let's just move on.
Yeah, that's right. I just heard the sound of Debbie Gord falling over dead. Don't you dare talk about candles on my game. But yeah, I mean...
They probably did. Oh, my God.
Well, it depends on if it was a birthday cake or not. Because, I mean, it probably was. I mean, I think a lot of her orders are... That's why she gets those high realism cake orders. Because it's, like, corporate cakes for, like, a launch of a product or a business or whatever. Or it's, like she's talked about this, that a lot of it is gag cakes. And that's why she doesn't get paid enough. Because people think, well, I'm going to order this weird thing for my friend or my colleague, but it's just a joke, so I don't want to pay what it's worth.
Right.
Because...
Well, Kickstarter makes up for that, I'm sure.
Yeah. Like you see these people in an industry, and you're like, why are you not a bazillionaire? Oh, right, because no one will pay us. That's right.
Yeah, no one will pay for cake. It's just cake. Yeah. Never forget that. It's just cake to them.
It's just cake. Or, I've had people say to me things like, well, it's the same going in as coming out. I'm like, bros. Like, no, actually. Yeah. If you want same going in and same going out, go buy the, grocery store sheet cake, whatever.
Yeah, some of it looks about the same going in as it does coming out.
Well, that's, again, one of those cake wrecks things, is how you can't, like, it's almost impossible to pipe chocolate icing that doesn't look like poo.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Like, every time I see the poo emojis, especially on Facebook now, it's got, like, the background thing you can put on, and it's got, like, all the floating poo emojis. I look at that, and I'm like, oh, chocolate swirls. And I'm like, ew, gross, no. But, like, because it looks like a cake with chocolate swirls on the top. That background just looks to me like that.
Ironically, last year or maybe it was the year before, for Audrey's birthday, she wanted the big emoji birthday cake assortment, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Basically a dessert table of emojis. And one of the things that I made was the easy little poop emoji cupcakes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, ironically, I was disappointed because no matter how artfully I attempted to pipe the poop, I couldn't make them look as much like a pile of poop emoji as I wanted to. I mean, I guess that just goes both ways.
Things only cake decorators need to worry about. Oh my god, I have a poop emoji cookie cutter. Yeah,
my poop wasn't good enough.
Your poop was insufficiently poopy. It actually looked like something cute that someone wants to eat. That's just so weird.
Could be the title of this podcast. My poop wasn't good enough.
Oh man, but I guess. I don't know. Did you want to talk about the TV thing? Because that was one of the things we'd been talking about in posts is the not awesome dream that is being scouted for TV.
Yeah. Where do we even start with that? Do we want to start with the one that sent the emails out?
Yeah. But let's not mention any brand names. I'm living in a country that doesn't have free speech as a, you know, truth as a defense against libel. So we're not going to mention any names of networks or production companies, but yeah, why don't you talk about that email that you got?
Okay, so there was this production company that sent out an email, and of course they make it sound good, and you want to be on TV. Like, if there's a decent opportunity, we're all at least a little piqued when we get an email from a production company. But then after some exploration and some talks back and forth, you come to find out that you have to actually pay them to be on this show.
Yeah.
And I mean, that is just, that's like far worse than the shows where they pay you a paltry per diem or some small total sum that doesn't even cover your costs.
Yeah. That's,
I mean, these another people step. Actually want you to pay because they've not even got a contract or anything for their show. They want to produce a show, and they don't have the funds to produce a show, and they want the actual participants of the show to fit the bill.
That's
insanity to me.
Yeah. That's
maybe
a new
they
low.
Found enough people who were really eager. I'll be nice. Really eager to be on TV and pay that. But I just can't imagine. Like, there's no way. I laughed. I was like, are you kidding me? There's no way I would ever pay to go on TV. And I really hope that people do understand that you don't have to.
No, you don't have to.
Like, you may not get paid, or you may not get paid very well.
Yeah, that was a new low.
But
like,
you don't have to pay.
Yeah, there's been a bit of an abusiveness in, not all the production and companies are bad or evil or abusive, but there's, I mean, I've had, the first time I got scouted for a cake show, it was one of the major cable networks was pitching a show. It was not Food Network. They were trying to compete with Food Network Challenge. And that was back when Food Network Challenge was the only one. Like, before there were all these other spinoffs and all the other networks. So one of the other cable networks approached me, like, by letter and asking me to come on a show. But they said I had to sign a non-disclosure agreement, an NDA, which I know what that is because I was a journalist. And so I know the ins and outs of NDAs, and sometimes there's legit reasons for an NDA. When I was a tech journalist, it was very common that a major tech company would pay for our flights and pay for our hotels and, you know, pay for our meals to come to their city for the launch of their new product. But they would give us early access to the information, and they would often ask to sign an NDA so that we couldn't disclose it early until the agreed publication date.
We need to talk about it before it's put out to the public.
Right, and that's largely to do with stock values and stuff, because otherwise it becomes an insider trading issue and stuff. So there's a really good ethical reason sometimes for an NDA, so they're not always bad. But in this case, the NDA they wanted me to sign, and my partner, I said to Kyla, like, would you be my partner on this? Let's talk to them. And the NDA they wanted us to sign had a clause. And this is why people, if you get these things, read every word. Read, like, you, like, don't treat it like one of these things, like, oh, I'll trust them. They're not going to do anything evil. Yeah, they will. So there was a clause in there that said, I mean, the standard clauses in NDAs, like, if you go on a competition show, you will have to sign something that says that you can't reveal the winner. Like, that's standard. That's okay. That's normal. Expect that. But this one's had a clause that said, we could not speak ill of this network or any of its shows in perpetuity.
Yeah.
which means, like, if there was, like, if this show, it was one of the networks that does, like, a lot of reality programming and, you know, science-y programming and things like that or whatever. And so, like, if, say I watched a documentary they did and I decided, oh, that was a stupid documentary and it really missed the point of the science or something. If I had said that on social media, I would have been violating that.
Yeah. There you are in violation.
Yeah, like 20 years from now if I had said that about that network. So I was like, ew, I don't really, like, I'm uncomfortable with this. And they said they would get back to me, and they didn't. But then also, the show never got made. So if I had signed that, I would actually be beholden to it and never even have gotten on TV.
Right. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, because, like, I would have still been, there was nothing in that contract that guaranteed I would get on TV. Or that it would ever, I mean, it had specific exclusions that I couldn't sue them if it didn't air or if I was edited out or anything like that. And again, some of that is standard, but it was really my first thing of, huh, you're sinking pretty low. And then...
Well, and how long ago was that? Because that sounds remarkably similar to that, something.
That was, let's see, definitely before Robin, so it was before 2013.
Could have been roughly 2010.
Well, it would have been after I won the Austin. I won first in Showcakes in Austin in February 2010. So it probably came after that, but it may have been later in 2010. It was probably 2010, 2011, 2012. I don't even think it was 2012. Probably 2010 or 2011.
I wonder if I have my date wrong. It might have been 2011. I'd have to check. At any rate, around that same time period, I was filmed with a very popular on television personality at the time and still, and it's never aired. It's never aired. And it wasn't even done where they normally do it. It was done in Springfield, Missouri, which is very near me. I had won a competition online, like based on a photo, and was invited to do that and was on stage and had a VIP session and all that stuff. It was really a thrill to me at the time. Yeah, I signed a non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah.
And I've never seen that. It's never aired. And I don't even have the paper anymore. Like, I lost a lot of things.
Yeah, well, it's not going to air at this point. Like, I mean, there's, you know, if it hasn't aired within a year or two, like, they just won't even air it because, like, you know, clothing has changed and whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're never going to air it.
No.
It was still a lot of fun. So, I mean, I guess I'll just chalk it up. The experience was fun. I got to do a lot of things and meet a personality and get photos and stuff. But it was fun to be approached.
It is. It's especially so,
when you're kind of new. But nowadays, like, I would be really careful about, you know, even trying out for anything. I was disappointed this year. I did audition for a show this year that I didn't make the cut for, and I was kind of sad about that because I was excited about it. But I mean, now that I see who all is on it, I'm like, ew, it's a good thing I'm not on there. That was the Halloween Baking Championship, and I went, you know, kind of far through the audition process, so I was kind of getting hopeful, but then it, you know, it just didn't happen. And that, it's got to be so much fun though.
Yeah, like, when they work well, I mean, because obviously, you know, Mike McCary will talk about being on Challenge and enjoying parts of it, and it seems like when it goes, when the shows are well-managed and not abusive, because even Challenge got abusive, like, when that thing where they made them go into the pool for their secret ingredient, I was like, or remember there was a season where they had to walk up and down stairs before taking their cake to the judging table, I'm like, really? That's just torture. Yeah. I'm not watching this to watch people suffer. I'm watching this for art. But the reality TV gets it in their head that people like, and I guess that's really true. You know, I think that might be the thing is I'm just not a mainstream thinker that I don't enjoy watching people be sad and frustrated.
We have to remember that we are only a very small segment of their target audience.
That's right. Yeah.
Like, we as a cake population are not a huge population. No matter how many of us there are, we're not near the general households who watch this on TV.
That's right.
We're not the target audience. I mean, they like that we like to watch the shows, which, I mean, I don't even watch the shows. If somebody I really like is on, I might catch a replay online, but I don't even have TV. I'm one of those weird people who doesn't even watch television. I don't even have television into my house. I have a TV, but my kids only watch DVDs and even VHS.
Yeah.
We're dinosaurs here. Yeah, we aren't the target audience, and we want to watch it for the art, but they want to make money. And to make money, that's what they have to do, and we have to be the willing or unwilling participants in that.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that we have to keep in mind. Is they're going to do whatever they want to with us once we're there. We're in their clutches and...
Yeah, we're the product. You know. We're the product. Yeah. And you know, like anything else, if you're the product and your master is benevolent, yay you. And if your master is looking to flog you in public for the enjoyment of people who enjoy watching people suffer, then they're going to make you... That's so really gross to me. Like, that's not what I'm watching for. And, you know, Kylie and I used to pitch these production companies because they used to always come scouting at the Austin show. I don't think they do anymore. I think they've kind of gone through that population, you know. Either everyone's already done it enough that they're not going back on, or they've been warned, like, from the scary ones. So I don't know that they even come sniffing around Austin so much anymore. But, like, we used to, when they would come, we would say, look, what we really want is an instruction show. We want a show where we can watch and learn. And they'd go, no. And you're right, because it's like, we're not a big enough audience. But, you know, the cake muggles, the people who know nothing about, people who don't know what Lambeth Method is, you know, they don't know about how to put a tiered cake together. They want to see the cake fall over.
Yeah, because it's drama.
It's yeah.
People thrive on drama.
They want to see a competitor reduced to tears. Yeah, and I don't want to see my friend on a show reduced to tears. I don't want to see my friend on a show get an injury because they're trying to use a torch too quickly. I don't. That's not fun for me. I don't enjoy that.
That's what they do. They will edit. And they will make you look like garbage if they want to.
I've had some other friends on some other cake competition shows where they were extremely upset and embarrassed because they're recording everything you say. So if you say anything catty about the cake over there, that you guarantee that's going to make it on the air and often out of context. And I've known of a couple cases where people were like, but I didn't say that about her cake when it was falling over. They, you know, okay, maybe I shouldn't have snarked on her cake, but when I did it, her cake wasn't falling over. Now, you know, they added it to make it sound like I'm snarking on her after it's falling over when I actually felt bad for her. Right. And so it's,
definitely see that.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, these shows do not exist for the goodness of humanity. Some do. Again, there are some good cake shows. But, yeah.
Have you worked 20 hours and feed you nothing but donuts and Red Bull?
Yeah, and you work hard on some of these shows. I'm like, some of them you have to be up at crack of dawn, and you're going to like start at 5 a.m. for the shoot, and which means you already have to be through makeup or whatever, and now you're going to speed cake for like 8 hours or whatever the challenge is. Because I don't know about anyone else, but I'm slow at decorating. Like, that's part of why I could never make good money doing this, because I'm too... Well, but no, I've gotten better in recent years of thinking, who is my audience? This is not a judged piece. Let it go. This five-year-old is not going to notice this piping. My friend who's paid for a cake is not expecting this to look like the real person or whatever, like the figure, the tiny little figure. They're not expecting that to look like the actual person from the movie or whatever. So I have let that go a bit, but like that is a judged competition and you have 8 hours, and like, it really burns me when they grade them on like if their tables aren't clean.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just like, one of the few episodes that I have watched, I'm just like, how unfair is this? I mean, you invite the most fabulous cake artist in the world to come be on your show, and then, you know, they basically produce garbage compared to what they're able to actually do.
Yeah.
And publicly humiliate them.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, really? And you don't even pay well.
Yeah, like, some of these things, like, you win the $5,000 or $10,000, but, like, it can cost you, like, $3,000. Like, they'll pay your airfare in a hotel, but they often don't pay for you to ship your own equipment out there.
It's hard to get everything even there. And then, you know, you have to buy a lot of that stuff once you are there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a thing on Challenge for a while there that often what was happening were people were having failures because their cakes had shrunk on the plane. Because it's a dry, you know, less pressurized environment. And so cakes that had been tightly wrapped when they go on the plane, they actually shrink. And so that, so now they've made like all these, you know, sheet cakes to carve to a specific size for a specific pre-built frame. And they get there and it's like an inch short. The cake is literally deflated. Like it's been squashed and it's like the, it's had the air actually sucked out of it. And that happened to several people before all the competitors clued in to either not fly with cakes or bring extra cake or have, you know, flexible plan that you could account for any damage en route or whatever. Because, yeah, I mean, physics, again, is coming for you whether you believe in it or not.
It stops for no one.
That's right. Oh, yeah, like...
That's one of the reasons I think I would be good on a show, because I'm usually able to think well and make substitutions on the fly.
And when you look at who won, again, like, I haven't watched a lot of more recent ones, but thinking again of Challenge, watching Mike McCary on Challenge, why did he win so much? Because he had to the minute statted out what need to happen when. And so that if something went wrong, he even had his wiggle room built in. And so there was one episode where he finished early, which I don't think the producers liked that. And then he was telling jokes to the audience, and they edited it to make him look like he was callously making fun of the other competitors. And I know that he's annoyed that that's not how that went down.
Oh, that's just wrong.
It's wrong, yeah. But that's because he had that statted out minute by, like, he had a thing, I remember, like, he would put it on the fridge. We're on hour 7:02. You know, we need to be whipping the ganache. We're on 7:04. The ganache needs to be in the bucket. Like, whatever it was, like, because he'd done that cake 10 times in his shop. And, you know, what is the time that it took? How can we save the time? Okay, you're going to do this part. I'm going to do this part. We're going to streamline. All right, now let's practice it on the schedule. Which, except you think about that in terms of the money. How much time was he taking away from his sales to practice, was it $10,000 worth?
Yeah, if he made the cake 10 times and used all his supplies and ingredients 10 times, which, I mean, I'm sure he, like, washed and reused what he could or whatever tactics he used to be able to do that, but that's a lot of supplies, that's a lot of time, that's time away from income-producing activities, and then, you know, how well was he really compensated for that?
Yeah.
Although it's nice to be able to say you won.
Well, and I'm sure, I mean, he's the cake god and we worship him in part because he was elevated on that show, right?
Yeah.
And probably he gets, well, okay, I know he must get business. Like, again, my other friends who've been on, they all report that in their communities, they're more likely to maybe get that wedding cake order because they can say as seen on blah, blah, blah show or as seen on such and such network, or they've got the patches on their chef coat or whatever. You know, to some extent, if they're selling classes, I'm sure they recoup it in selling classes because people love to be around celebrities. I call this is my three of celebrity goo. That
what, you know what? I never even thought about doing that when I do a class.
Yeah.
I'm totally going to use that, even though my show never aired.
Yeah, no, I've been on as seen on TV, not quite. As not quite seen on TV, yeah.
I can't say as seen on TV because it never aired, but I'm sure there's a way I can use it.
Okay, I call it celebrity goo because I used to volunteer for a TV show, a PBS kids show in Austin called The Biscuit Brothers. And one of the guys, he didn't understand why people wanted pictures with him, like their kids. He did it and he was fine with it. And he was, you know, really, they're super kind, nice guys. And he's like, yeah, but it's so weird. Like, because you just met someone for a minute. I'm like, because you have celebrity goo. That when the more celebrity you are, the more celebrity goo you have, and the more other people want it on them. So if they're close to you in some way, they get a bit of celebrity goo.
Oh,
it sticks on them.
Well, and I do have that here because being such a small town, you know, nobody else who's around here has ever been to a cake competition hardly, and nobody's ever met any cake celebrities. And of course I've met quite a few, and that does work for me a little bit here. People are like, oh, she's the one who, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, I guess that does work.
I think it does. If I had more of it,
I might be able to see that effect better.
Yeah, I think it does. I think where it works is if you're in one of those mid-range markets. I think if you go on one of these shows and you're not like the top winner and your market is like New York, LA, Houston, like a massive city, I don't think it's going to put a drop in your bucket. But and I think if you're in the one that lost. Yeah, well, definitely. I think if you're super rural, again, you're not going to elevate the base that people can even pay you. But I think if you're in that mid-range, you know, suburbia of a major city, or, you know, a medium city like Austin. Like, Austin's a medium city, right? I think in those kinds of markets, that's where there are only, like, maybe five wedding cake decorators. There's enough business to sustain five, so there is competition. And so now maybe you're getting that edge of competition because you were the one on TV.
Yeah, it could be a small advantage.
Yeah, I think but again, only in those situations. Because, yeah, like, you're talking about you're in the foothills of the Ozarks. How many other competitors do you have that if you went on TV, that is going to make that substantial difference, right?
Well, yeah. It kind of does make a difference here, though, because nobody else can say, you know, that they've had a VIP session with the cake boss.
Right.
Or, you know, that they've taken classes from Sidney Galpern or Burton Farnsworth or, you know, all these, you know. Yeah. Nobody else around here does that. I'm the only one that does that. So.
But do they even know those names? Like, because I have friends here who are deep into the quilting world, and they'll talk to me about, like, because of the BBC quilting show, and they're like, oh, I met so-and-so. Like, I can't remember the guy's name, like, that my friends are just gushing about, that they've met this guy, and I don't remember his name. And I talk about Mike McCary, and they're like, who?
I think people know who Sydney is now.
Maybe.
And Sydney even came to Little Rock recently, and I got to sit in on one of her demo classes. That was a lot of fun. And she's known here, you know, and
that's,
I mean,
good. She's sweet.
Where's Betty not known? But yeah, they don't know who Burton is.
I do. I've met him.
Because Burton, he's the most delightful human on the planet.
I know.
I love him. I do. I love you so much, Burton.
Oh, I'm sure he's not listening to this podcast, but that would be epic if he did come on my show. If he is. I met him at the end of one of the Austin shows. Because I had done the show cake before, and I'd sort of been typecast as my cakes are lots of little figures doing things. And he had entered a cake, that year, but I had, and the show cakes, but I actually didn't do that year. That was the year I did the Lady of Shalott stained glass, and, people thought his cake was mine. And I'm like, that is a huge compliment. Oh my God. And so yeah, I gushed to him. And then it turned out he recognized some, he didn't know my name, but he recognized my cakes that had gone around from previous shows. And he was gushing at me and I was gushing at him. And they were both like, we can't believe that you're gushing at, like, it was a love fest. It was so nice. And I was supposed to be volunteering, like, help do a cleanup, and people like coming past me, sweeping, giving me side eye, like, you're supposed to be helping right now. And I'm like, no, sorry, Burton and I are just standing here, like, gushing at each other for, like, an hour. It was amazing.
I stole Burton at the last thing that I met him at. I stole him and even took him home with me.
You let him go eventually, right?
Burton, we had an epic evening. Me, Burton, and Vincent, actually. I was in Michigan, and we went to the Okemos. It was a Michigan DOS? I can't remember what it was. I think it was. I can't remember even really what the event was. But, you know, I took his class and we had a great time. And I asked him and Gary if they wanted to come back later and just hang out, because we talked so much and had so much fun. And me, Burton, and my friend Juanessa, I don't know if you know Juanessa White. Oh, wait, she's not white anymore. She got married. But we all went out to lunch, I think. And I mean, we had the best time. So I was like, yeah, party at my house.
That's awesome.
Which is really my dad's house because I don't live in Michigan, obviously. So we had a party.
That's
a
cool.
Little party. It was little, but he showed.
Isn't that amazing? That's, yeah.
I was so obsessed with him for so long. He's just amazing.
Yeah.
He's like one of the most delightful humans on the face of the planet. And there's just no getting around that. He is amazing.
Yeah. And when you meet someone like that, it just like, like it just you're just so happy.
So kind.
Yeah.
He's just so kind and so humble and just, you know, one of the most incredible artists, and that he even cared enough to even spend a minute with me just, you know, thrilled me. And it was just a real opportunity and a blessing to get to spend so much time together. It was really nice.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I haven't actually seen nor heard from him since that Austin show.
Well, he's not really, you know, super active in the cake world anymore.
Yeah.
He went back to school and got a master's degree in, I think, art education.
Okay.
And he's teaching art students. So I think on a high school level.
Okay.
Gosh, I hope I'm right. But yeah, he's sharing his awesomeness with lots of folks. So he's doing his little bit in the world.
Oh, that's good.
And he does have a page, CakeFX, if anyone wants to look at that, in case you haven't been exposed to his
awesomeness,
whimsical creations.
Yeah, I'll link to it in the show notes, too. I friended you because of Heather Sherman, because she said you were a sweetheart. And I was like, I will friend this person, because that's high praise for, you know, Heather's a sweetheart, too. So if she says someone's nice, then they're nice, right?
Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah,
so, another person we could talk about. Holy crap.
Yeah, we could gush about Heather for a good long time.
I still, once in a while, and I'm so flattered by it, but once in a while, someone thinks that I did her rainbow pegacorn. And of course, I never did. I never even tried.
Because that is the single most misattributed cake on the internet, I'm pretty sure.
But I had made a unicorn cake, which is, you know, my best known cake, sometime after she made that. And so sometimes people, mostly cake muggles or new cake people, sometimes think that I made that one. And so once I created a little, it was before we called memes. I made a little graphic that showed Heather's cake and her name, and then my cakes, because I had a couple of different rainbow unicorn combinations. These are my cakes. This is Heather's cake. For those of you who keep getting it mixed up.
Right.
Whoa, she's amazing. I'm over here. She is up there.
Yeah, her detail is just, and she's like so fearless. She's just like, the project she takes on, and she just like does it. And it's just like epic. And the basilica amazing thing that she did. And just like, so like she just does it. And it's
amazing.
Yeah. And she got such an artist's heart.
Stuff because, you know, it's a different kind of cake, but it's just like Debbie. You know, if Heather posts something, it's going to be epic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I always try to look at her stuff.
Yeah.
But other than her cakes, though, I just like her.
Yes.
She's really a good person.
She's my cake wife. We got cake married, and Mike McCary said, yeah, that works, which means our union is blessed by cake God. So, you know, it's holy and everything.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Well, because we're both just such nerds, right? Like, I think because we finally met at an Austin show, and then it was just one of those things like where you're just, you know, you make a new friend. And also they're a cake artist, too. And you're like, oh, you made this nerdy cake? I made a nerdy cake like that. No, I love that movie, too. And, you know, like that kind of, yeah. So.
Well, I will forever be Vincent's cake wife. We all know that. I am sugarly married to the gelatin boss. And I actually took his first ever, and possibly it may still be to this day, his only ever private instruction. Yeah, he did a little private class for me at his house. It was when Diana Simmons, when she had come out with her butterfly wing gelatin. Oh, gosh, what are those things called? I can't remember.
The texture mat thing?
Yeah, and they were, you know, she created those, and those were a first, you know, around that time. And she had a little book a small paperback book that went with them too. And, you know, he experimented a lot with those. And I think he was really the only one that was, you know, really doing something with them at the time. And he has had failing eyesight issues since then. So he doesn't work on things as much as he used to. And he's still dedicated to the Sugar Skulls collab, which he's going to kick my butt if I don't put something in this time.
That's where I met him, was in collaborations. He seems to now be doing a lot of collaboration management.
Yeah. Well, he's really blossomed. But yeah, I got to do that, and that was the best time. I had no idea how to use gelatin before that. And I actually, years and years and years ago, sought him out. This was back when he wouldn't take anybody for a friend. Like, he had 7 friends or something, mm-hmm. you know? He wouldn't take anybody. He didn't want to talk to anybody. He wouldn't even accept your message, you know? And I kept on talking to him in the group all the time because I thought he was fascinating. I was like, one of these days, this guy's going to accept my damn friend request.
Yeah, it's not like he had the 5,000 excuse.
Yeah. I just persisted. I was so persistent. And it was like a long time. I don't even want to know how long it took before he opened my message and actually accepted my friend request. But ever since, it's like we're the best friends ever.
Oh,
and I always be his cake wife. He came to my first class when I did the unicorn structured cake class. Well, he didn't just come to the class. I mean, he helped me prepare for the class. We spent the night in a hotel near the class. I mean, like, we stuck to each other like glue that whole week.
When you meet your cake friends like that, that's, you know, that's what keeps us going.
And that's where I met Lucia, and Rosie. I was so terrified to give this class because 2 executive pastry chefs signed up for my class. And I was so intimidated. I was like, oh, my God, actual real pastry chefs have signed up for my class. What am I going to do?
Right.
I have no idea how to do this class.
Yeah. Wow.
I was like, oh, my God, they've actually paid. I can't get out of it now. I was so scared. And there was no reason for it at all. Everybody was so gracious and so wonderful. And the class took far longer than I had projected for it. I mean, it's one thing to make a cake on your own
mm-hmm.
that, you know, you don't have to stop and explain and you don't have to show people how to do stuff. And I was shocked at how long the class actually took. I think we all were.
Yeah, that's one of those things you learn. That's like newbie instructor 101 is that. Now do it, like, do the thing you do that you know how to do that you are obviously then qualified to teach. And now pause every 5 seconds to explain it and then explain it again and then go help the person who's having trouble, like, especially because I teach a lot of kid stuff. Like, it just takes so long. Like, I can knock out, like, the basic level sort of cookies that we do at the Austin show for the kids classes. Yeah, like, I can knock one out in 10 minutes, but that's an hour-long class.
Yeah, I do a lot of kids' classes, too. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Because
no one budgets enough time, because it's just, it's just over and over. You have to do the same thing with each person sometimes, yeah. And that class should have been a 2-day class, if I had any brains at all, but it's kind of like when I delivered that wedding cake, you know, or failed to deliver it because it fell apart. I had no idea, you know. And so we were there till almost dark, I think. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, we had a great time. And I made lifelong friends. I'm still friends with everybody who took that class. And I'm really close friends with more than half the people who took that class. So I would definitely do it again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why I like going to cake shows. I mean, I like competing. We all know Kim likes to compete. We all know that Kim's not going to a show if there's no competition. But, like, number 2 reason is because I want to see people. There are people I want. And it's like, now I'm always you know, because I can't come to the U.S. anymore, I'm like, who's coming to Cake International, which is super expensive. So, like, hardly any Americans are coming. But, like, just, you know, Innovative Sugar Works was just posting that they're confirmed to come out because they're having a booth, which means I get to see Casey and Megan and Jen from Innovative Sugar. I assume they're all coming. And it's like, yay! So, like, I haven't seen them since the Austin show. And so it, like, you know, you hang with your cake peeps, your cake friends, and...
Oh, yeah. I miss going to shows. Haven't been to any shows since before Olivia was born.
Right.
Oh, man. Like, we're every time you say the Austin show, I'm like, oh, inside.
I'm sorry.
I'm like, oh, my people. Oh.
I know. We need a virtual show.
I need to come up with a class and actually submit it in time and really get my act together so that I can afford to go to the Austin show.
Yeah, because I can tell you, it's already closed for this year because we were...
I saw the announcement and there was no way I could deal with it when it came out. And I didn't have anything even in mind yet. So there's no way for this year at all.
Yeah, and I can tell you, because I see the application, like, I don't see all the applications coming in, but I see a lot of the community, because I still have access, you know, I still volunteer, right? I'm still Kyla's loyal minion flunky. And so I can see, like, the questions we get, and when instructor applications open, there's, like, the initial flood of everyone who had their stuff ready. The keeners who are like everything ready and they need to get to the show and they need to make it. So often it's a class they've already done before somewhere, or they've revamped for Austin, or it's a class they were planning to launch at Austin, or whatever the case is. And those applications all come in like in the first 24 hours. And then there's kind of a lull. And then there's the people who panic right at the end. Oh my God, I won't be able to go to Austin if I don't get a class in. And then there's the parade of people who come the next week. Oh, have applications closed? Oh, I'm clicking it and it says password required. Why? And we're constantly telling them, well, we did put out 10 warnings that it's closing. And then they ask things like, well, can you still consider my class anyways? And it's like, the classes have now been chosen.
We have 15 people and we only planned on 12 or whatever.
Right, exactly. And then, okay, so then we get the other side of it. Then we get the people who are like, oh, how come you took away so-and-so's class? I was going to sign up for that. And we're like, well, we put out 10 newsletters and social media reminders to say, sign up now because otherwise classes will get canceled. And you didn't bother and now you're sad.
Yeah, that could be a whole other podcast.
Oh,
why you should sign up early for classes.
Yeah. If you genuinely want, like, I do suspect a lot of people who say, oh, I was totally going to sign up for it, but it's canceled. I know at least some of those people, they were never going to sign up for it. It's often they're saying that they mean to compliment. I mean, I talk about this with my novels, my fiction novels too. People will say, I'm going to buy your book. I'm so excited that you wrote a book. Oh my God, I'm going to buy it. And then they don't. They think they're being kind. And so I understand these kind of compliments. They come as a compliment. They're meant to be lifting you up. Like, yay for you, you did this thing. Or yay for this person who was going to teach a class. But ultimately...
But they're not honest.
It's not honest. And it sets expectations. So when people say to cake artists, oh, I really wish you would come to my venue. I really wish you would come to my city and teach a class. And then you don't support them. It's really actually... financially damaging to them. When people say to me, oh, I really want you to make a PDF on how to make that cake you posted, and I put it out there and three people buy it, like, well,
yeah, and you spent 12 hours making it
at least. Like, I mean, so I made that little swirly dragon cake that I donated to Robin's school fair, and I was actually kind of shocked. Like, you know, like when you have something that's really good, like, well, you're proud of it, like, it's okay, but then, like, everyone's like acting like it's the best thing ever, and you're kind of like, I didn't think it was that good. Like, and I'm not even talking about my imposter syndrome. Like, I have imposter syndrome anyway, but this wasn't even imposter syndrome. This is like, guys, this is a really basic cake. Like, I really don't get why there's this level of tension. Like, really legit, not in a panicked, oh my God, you're looking at my thing and I'm all freaked out, imposterized. No, this was just, okay. But people love the cake. And it's like, alrighty then. And so I said... well, if 10 of you tell me that you would buy a PDF of this priced around, like, what did I say, like, you know, $10 or whatever, I will make it. And one person said yes. And I was like, okay. And she goes, when is it coming out? I'm like, when you find 9 more friends. Like, I'm not going to do it for, because I'd have to remake the cake to take more photos. Because I took some photos, like, for it, but I wasn't, when, again, it's like with the instructor thing, like, leaving more time. When you have to plan something for tutorial, you got to remember to take a photo every step of the way, even if you don't even use them all. You got to have always, all that.
Yeah, all the time, every time I've made a decent cake that people really liked, it's always been on some customer's schedule.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't a cake that I did in my spare time for leisure. I don't have the money for supplies to do that crap. This was a cake somebody ordered and paid for, and it was due by 7 o'clock, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm down to the wire, and I have to finish everything. There's no time to take photos. There have been a few times that I tried to do that so that I could maybe make a tutorial or something, maybe pitch a class. And, you know, after a while, you look at the clock and the time has just slipped away and you don't have time to stop and stage a photo and still finish your cake on schedule. So that gets abandoned. That's what happens to me.
It's time for a podcast helpful reminder. Are you working on a competition piece? Are you working on a client cake? When was the last time you checked the rules for your competition entry? When was the last time you read your client contract to make sure that you're spelling that name right? You're working really hard, I know, but every once in a while, you need to pause, go check that you're doing it right, because you're an amazing artist, but we all make mistakes. So right now, if you can pause, go check what you need to do, make sure it fits in the space that it needs to go into, make sure everything's spelled right, and then get back to work, because you're awesome.
What do you have coming up? Like, I mean, are you going to try teaching anything or anything recent? Or are you just sort of completely all stuck with the kids and the other business and all that stuff?
I've had a couple of requests for some classes, and some of them are kind of persistent. So I probably should take advantage of that and get some classes together locally. And then, like, it's never too early for me to start pitching or putting together a pitch for Austin, should I ever actually get it together enough to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, because, it'll be next June when it'll open up for...
Right. It'll take me forever to plan something and make enough time to do it and photograph it and all that and then write it up. And
yeah, because you have to have all that ready.
I can be the person that submits within the first 24 hours.
Yeah. But, like, that's why the people who submit right away, it's because they've got that ready. They've got the photos and all that stuff ready. And it's super frustrating for us. And it actually, over the years, we've learned to maybe be a little less likely to take a class where someone doesn't have the photos ready. Because they say, that what happens is they say, I'll get you the photos. And the fact is, the class will not sell without photos.
Yeah.
So if we get to the point that we're listing them on the website, which, you know, is we really like to have done in November, but realistically, it never happens till December, then in December, when stuff is listed, if there are, you know, 10 classes and one of them has no picture, guess which one's not selling?
Oh, yeah.
Like, maybe Mike McCary can get away with not having a picture yet.
Yeah, Trinity Chapman cannot get away with not having a picture.
Yeah, I don't know very many. Like, even, like, Nick Lodge, if he doesn't have a picture of the flower. I mean, which he always does, because he's Nick Lodge, so he's, like, super organized. So, of course, he always has his pictures. But, like, we've even had, like, names you can know, like, good decorators, but because they haven't gotten around to getting us the picture, the class doesn't sell. So yeah, you have to do all that planning. You have to have your long description and your short description and your how much you're going to charge and your supply list. You need to submit your supply list. So
I need to take an in-depth look at that, how they handle it there.
Well, so it depends on what you need.
They supply some stuff and you supply some stuff. And
yeah, because it depends. Like Austin as a cake show has a bazillion rollers. Like, if you just need rollers, you know, if we can make it easier for an instructor to fly in and not have to carry, you know, 2 dozen little nylon rollers, that's a thing we can provide. You know, Satin Ice being a sponsor of the show is, you know, we, you're getting Satin Ice fondant in the classroom, right? Now, so if you want different fondant, that's going to be a thing that's going to have to be worked out. But so when you do your application, it, you need to list on there, like, do you need electricity in your room because you have to run a microwave? Do you need us to supply a microwave?
There you go. Do you need a microwave? That's something you might not think of.
Right, because like I once taught one of the kids' classes where we needed to melt chocolate. So I had to make sure that not only did I request the microwave, but we had to schedule that class when a microwave was available, because I think the show owns, like, I don't know, four, five, six microwaves and the carts that they're on. But then also the class, the kids' classroom has electricity. Not all the classrooms have electricity.
Yeah, and I actually ran into something like that similar with a class that I've taught. It was the unicorn class again, and they didn't have a walk-in cooler in their bakery. And yeah, I had just assumed that they did because they were a bakery, you know, a storefront and commercial production and all that. I assumed that they had a walk-in cooler, and they didn't. So we had nowhere to chill our cakes. So that was kind of hard. It made things much more difficult than they had to be.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's so, yeah, you can't submit a class until you have, you've worked out, you've done, you've made the thing and taken photos. And if you're doing a handout, you've taken the photos for the handout or whatever, and you've worked out the description and you've done it enough times that you know what is the time that you need for the, is it a beginner level class? So you need longer because no one knows how to cover a cake. All that you have to have worked out. You have to have your supply. You have to know what supplies you need. You don't necessarily need to know what does Austin have and what do you have to bring. But all classes must be all supplies included. So you can't tell people to bring their own Dresden tool or whatever. Like, well, Dresden tools are the kind of thing that Austin will give you a Dresden tool to use. Like, we have a bazillion of those that, like, instructors can use. But, like, if you have a weird tool, like, if you're going to teach an airbrushing class, pretty much you're bringing airbrushes. So you need to know, like, well, I need 15 cake boards. I need 23 number one tips and piping bags and couplers. It's actually a phenomenal amount of work to plan these things on that micro scale. I mean, this is part of the thing. Like, I don't know if anyone's taking over the kid classes now that I'm not going to be there to do them. And I'm a little bit afraid that we might get a volunteer who thinks that that's easy because I've made it look easy because I've just done so much work. Like, it takes me several days each year to just do the supply list for the kids' classes. Who needs what and when in what portions?
Yeah, definitely know it inside and out.
Yeah, like, I'm afraid that they'll get a volunteer to do the kids' classes who doesn't realize that I spend all day Friday at the Austin show pre-portioning out fondant in little cups. It's, like, not a good environmental day, I'll tell you right now, because of portion cups. Because in order to make money on the kids' classes, we need to swap them out quickly, like, no more than half an hour between classes. And then the classes are short, like they're an hour to 2 hours max. So if you're taking 20 minutes to hand out five different colors of fondant, that's half your class gone. So the fondant all needs to be pre-portioned out on Friday. And because we take sales up until 10 minutes before the class starts, you have to pre-portion fondant as if you've got all 15 students, even if only three are signed up at that time.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Right. Yeah.
It could happen.
Right. And so it does. It has happened where we've had, like, three signed up, and then like, a family of five buys a bunch. They show up to the show, and they're, oh, look, a kids' class. All five of you can go take this kids' class. And so you go from three kids to eight kids in, like, 5 minutes, you know. And so you have to have it all pre-portioned out. And so I'm a little bit afraid. If there's a volunteer out there who's thinking about taking on kids' classes, please understand that there's that level of work. And don't make us look bad by not having things ready. Because you have to have, like, if there's a class that's piping, all those piping bags need to be filled. If the icing needs to be colored, that all has to be done before the show even opens.
Right.
And I have a whole system where I get boxes and I box everything by the class. So when the next person comes, like, if it's my teaching, because I teach most of the classes myself, but then I have other volunteers who come and teach a class. And it's like, okay, so my friend, like, when Shannon Orr, whom I adore, because now that's like a song we keep singing that I just adore, Shannon Orr. When she came and taught a class so I could go have lunch, I had everything in a box for her. So as the previous class is cleaning up look, here's your box. Here's all your fondant pre-portioned. Here are the handouts. Here are the cookie cutters. Here are the Dresden tools. Here are the brushes and the water. And here we, and bang, bang, bang. It's all out. Done.
Yep. Class in a box.
Class in a box. And I have the boxes stacked in the corner by order that they're needed. Because you have no time. Like, you can't sit there and portion it all out. You can't open a box of, or a bucket of satin ice and start conditioning it at the start of class. It's got to be done. It's already got to be done. And so, yeah, in December, when I'm planning those classes and I've got, like, whatever other guest instructors are doing it, they have to tell me their supply list. They, are you bringing everything or are we giving you something? And I then submit this giant list of supplies to the show organizers to say, and I do it two different ways. I give them a class-by-class list and an amalgamated list so that overall I need a half bucket of green satin ice. I need two buckets of black satin ice. I need 15 rollers, 15 wheels, 15 Dresden tools, 15 work boards, 15 of, you know, and then how many cookie, okay, well, they've got one class uses four cookies each and one class uses six cookies each. And so then I need to do the aggregate number of cookies I need for the entire weekend is this. It's a huge amount of work.
Yeah, I guess I never want to do that.
No, and I'm that's what I'm saying. I'm like really afraid that someone, I will have made it look easy and someone is going to try it and just have a lot of sad children.
Note to self. Do not volunteer to help organize at Austin.
No, I didn't say that. Volunteer? No, you're going to get me in trouble now. Kyla's going to come and beat me with a stick. Volunteer at Austin. Just don't assume it's easy. We make it look easy because we work our butts off. That's the key. Take on a job, and if you want a volunteering gig at Austin, that's short and easy. We do have those. They're just not managing all the kids' classes. So.
Yeah. Well, when I do a kids' class, I don't want to even do, like, this past Christmas, I did gingerbread cookies, decorate gingerbread cookies. Oh, my gosh. We had a great turnout. Crazy me. I scheduled pretty much back-to-back classes all day because I had to rent the venue where I had the classes.
Right.
And if I'm going to rent a venue, then I need to make the most out of that monetarily, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had it for 8 hours total or something like that. It was all I got. So I needed to schedule the classes as many as I could with a small break in between to be able to clean up and, you know, set up for the next class and have them come right in and be ready to start.
Yeah.
Okay, so some of my help didn't show up. Thank goodness my daughter did, Alexandra. She's the best. And I only had 30 minutes between these classes. It was insane.
Yeah, that's a really short term. You know? Yeah.
But to be able to pull off all four classes, that's what I had to do. And it was kind of just like you said, I had class in a box, class in a box, class in a box. All the classes weren't even gingerbread cookies. There was a cupcake, like a Winter Wonderland cupcake. There was a couple of gingerbread men, and then there was something else I can't remember. But there were four classes total, and so I used plastic tablecloths on all the tables and had everything in separate Rubbermaid tubs, and everything was, you know, pretty much lined out and ready to go. And then after each class, I would take all the tools off, and if there was any, you know, anything that I didn't want to throw in the garbage, I took off the table, and then we would gather up the tablecloth, sprinkles, icing and all.
Yep.
Wad it up and throw the whole thing in the trash and lay a new tablecloth and then immediately begin setting out supplies. Mm-hmm. And there were like four tables, I think, like your standard size folding tables.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to do four tables each time. I mean, there was no break. There was no time to even run to the restroom. It was nuts.
Yeah.
So, wait, why did I tell you that? don't make myself sound experienced at that or anything.
Yeah, I've just nominated you head of kids classes for Austin. It doesn't pay well.
What was I saying? Something about, I'm afraid I won't be able to make it to Austin.
But yeah, so like I honestly don't know if anyone's taking over or if it's just like that's too hard because Kim's not doing it.
Yeah, Trinity's not going to do it.
Yeah, I don't know if they've got someone. Maybe they have, but I'm just really...
I'm sure they do. Somebody wants to do that because they think it's fun.
that's my worry. Someone's going to think, oh, it's fun to hang out with kids. Yeah. I mean, I love doing it, but it's hard. It's hard. So
I had this amazing kid in one of my gingerbread man classes. I put it on for the foster kid community around here, and we got sponsors, and then I can't remember how many attended, but this one kid really made an impression on me. He was so good at decorating these, and he had never done it, and I didn't expect him to be very interested to begin with, because I think he was about 14. He was kind of, you know, I'm so cool when he came in the room, and I was like, oh, there's my problem child. But you know what? He really got into it. It was so cool. He wasn't making regular gingerbread men. We knew he wasn't going to do that. But what he did was he made like Spider-Man gingerbread, and he made, I don't know who they all are, but some other characters. And they were really recognizable and cool. And it was just so neat that he did that. And he had so much fun, and he was so thrilled that we liked what he was doing with them. I just really enjoyed him. I still think about that and smile because he really did like decorating gingerbread cookies. He just didn't think he was going to.
Yeah, that's so magical when that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great. I put him on my Facebook page. I had to get permission.
Yeah, that's another thing, yeah. Because I've had instructors come in and think that because in adult classes, they like to do that thing at the end where they all stand in front of their works, or stand behind their work and take the picture for social media. And I'm like, no, you cannot do that with under 13s without like a signed paper from their parents. You can't.
Different when you have foster children, because their guardian is the state, and the state just doesn't play that game.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I didn't put his picture. I have pictures of him with his work that I was allowed to take, but I didn't post them on Facebook on my cake page. I only posted his gingerbread men. I also had close-ups of those. So that's what I actually did, was posted those.
Yeah, I've told people, the instructors, you can take pictures of the stuff and post that. I mean, ask the kids, can I post this? I mean, that's just polite. But like, you know, legally, we're not going to get in hot water because you posted someone's cookie, right? That's fine. But no, under no circumstances can you line up a bunch of under 12s. Because that's, I mean, the Austin K classes are for 5 to 12s. Just the internet law does not let you do that. Managing kids' classes is such a huge issue in ways that adults aren't. You know, like if an adult in the middle of class needs to get up and go to the bathroom, they go. We have to have a volunteer who walks them to the bathroom door and can't go in with them. Right. Like, you know, they all have to be potty trained. I can't deal with a 3-year-old who needs help pulling down their pants. We're not all background checked FBI, like, because that costs us a fortune to do. And then we have to have specific volunteers. And no, we can't do that. So like our policy is, and the way we state it for parents, so like we've written these rules and no one ever reads the rules except for me who writes them. But like it's on the poster in front of the door. If your child needs to go to the bathroom, a volunteer will walk them to the outside bathroom door and then wait and walk them back to class. But we're not going in the bathroom with them, and we're sure not going in the stall with them.
Yeah.
Right? Like
liability.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a massive problem that we can't deal with. You know, we keep a list of parent phone numbers, so if they cry for their mommies, we call their mommies, you know. But that's the other thing we got to say, you know, the carer has to stay at the show. And while we sort of do vaguely sort of encourage, like, hey, you can go take a class while your kid's in class, it's with the caveat, but if your kid cries, you have to leave your paid class to come get them.
Uh-huh.
Because we're not a licensed care facility. I constantly say we're not a licensed care facility. We're not a licensed care facility. It's not babysitting. It's a class.
Yeah, I usually do classes where the parents and the children decorate together.
And I've done that in Austin, like, separately, too. But they don't sell as well.
Yeah.
Not at the show, because they want to dump their kids in there and then go shopping, really, is what they want to do.
Yeah, and it's an experience for the kids, and I get it. But yeah. As the organizers, it's different from what the parents want.
Yeah, because I just
know we've told them much fun it
is. Yeah, I know. Well, I just don't want it done badly. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If someone wants to take it over and do it, I will advise from here. I will help as much as I can from here. But please don't do it badly, because if we do it badly and something bad happens, we can't do it anymore. We can't have a reputation. We can't have the PR disaster of kids crying because they had a miserable class. We can't have a PR disaster of you didn't manage this well when X went wrong. So we need only highly competent, highly dedicated people in that role. So
just say you want control freaks.
Yeah, no, you have to be a control freak. If you're running kids' classes, you absolutely have to be a control freak. So, anyway, I'm sad. I have FOMO about not coming. It is what it is. But now you're going to take over for me like we've totally just established. Run, Trinity, run!
Did I hear a voice?
You had nothing else to do.
I'm blocking you.
Blocked and reported. Yeah, I don't know what happened if you blocked me in the middle of a messenger call. That would be really weird, wouldn't it? Anyway, so we're getting punch drunk, so it probably is time to wrap up, because you need to go put your kiddo to bed. I need to actually go to bed, because it's 2:18 in the morning.
I've seen some stray children peeking out and getting very discouraged that I've been out so long.
I'm sorry, children, I've stolen your mommy.
I'll tell them they said so.
Yeah. Mean lady in England stole your mommy. Wow, that's like, sounds like traumatic, doesn't it?
It sounds like I've been kidnapped, and I may as well have been.
But you have not been attacked by a rooster for a good 3 hours, so that's a win.
I've felt quite safe. Good conversation, lots of fun. Yeah, so, thanks.
Thank you so much for coming on, and good luck with your classes that you've got coming up and all the other stuff you're doing. And
well, thank you.
Right. Well, so I will say good night then.
All right. Good night to you, and make it great.
Thanks so much. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors. And you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website, eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cake formation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on.
Podcast, my poop wasn't good enough.